You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
And this hour, we are hanging out with visual activist Zanele Moholi, one of my favorite South Africans, who has had a body of work that is absolutely astounding for a good near couple of decades now already, both here in South Africa but also internationally, and someone who, as an artist, has done an incredible amount to really merge questions of activism with politics and also with artistic excellence. But who is she? What drives her? And what is behind the latest output from this absolutely amazing South African? Well, we get to know her. Any questions that you might have, give us a call throughout this hour. Tell us what you make of her career so far. What has touched you? When did you hear about her work? And just anything really that you'd like to ask of Moholi. She's here with us. Zanele, thank you so much for coming into the studio. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Makeza.
You know, when I think about you and what words to use to describe you, it's very difficult in a way that I think is useful, because at the heart of your work are questions of, in part, language, identity, and description. Maybe we can start there. In terms of where you fit into the South African and the global landscape, how do you self-describe your career? Is it as visual activist, as artist? What for you is the most precise, even if language is not always precise?
I call myself a visual activist specifically, and I'm using visuals to push a political agenda to ensure that our visuals, our photographs, our identities are in the mainstream media and beyond, because most of the time there's this tendency of, like, boxing. If you say you're a visual artist, people take that lightly. Because then sometimes art is not regarded as a serious career.
That's
whereas
right.
There are so many artists around the globe who are pushing political, you know, issues using art as their means of articulation. So I sit around, you know, or within that position to say we can't just take click, 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 take photographs for fun. Sometimes we need to look at deeper issues. So that's where I'm at.
I was also trying to remember yesterday the first time I'd actually physically met you. And I'm not sure whether you can remember. I might have an imperfect memory. You know, I've got one foot in the grave now. We're no longer young. I think I might have met you at a gender dynamics conference. But whether, even if that's a false memory, it made me realize that the other interesting challenge for someone interviewing you is that because your work is so centrally about visibility and identity, the body, the physical body, and its relationship to who we are psychologically is something that has driven your work for a very long time.
Yes.
So even language that refer to you in terms of the body as you present it.
Yes.
What are your reflections on that? Because it's amazing how 10, 15 years ago, when an outfit like Gender Dynamics or whatever conference, for example, on transgender bodies, even those of us who self-identify as queer but cis, we were dumb. We still are very dumb around a lot of issues where you would think that we are literate. But sometimes you can be gay and be really bigoted and stupid on questions of transgender, gender non-conforming issues. Where are you at in relation to the politics around naming and the body and your own body?
Naming is very, very important, because for the longest time we have dealt with bodies, but then some people refuse to name those bodies within certain spaces. And if you talk about, like, the existence of gender dynamics, for instance, which plays a very, very important role, and you think to yourself that what then existed before gender dynamics, and what sort of languages or text that's been, you know, used by different people who might not be scholars.
Yes.
Even oral histories that's been there, you know, speaking on or about and transgenderism or sexual minorities in different spaces become something else. But I could think to myself that that positionality is very, very key to say, to name ourselves and make sure that those who do not understand and refuse to understand get a grip or a bit of understanding of who those bodies are, especially black bodies in spaces where racism is still rife, you know, and which is what I'm touching on this current or recent publication, to say let's speak about these issues, let's do not shy away from the fact that we still don't see many of us at museums, at galleries, even if those bodies are in those galleries or museums, who then is the photographer, you know, and who are the subjects?
Sure.
And then it happens that the queer bodies, you know, trans bodies are othered, you know.
You know, this work, and I want you to speak to the work that you have in front of us. Describe the project to us. I was saying a little bit earlier at 9 o'clock when I was telling the listeners what to expect in the middle hour of the show. What's really interesting about portraits and self-portraits is that in the wrong hands, and your hands are the right hands, not the wrong hands, self-portraits, like self-sketches for a writer, can be very narcissistic and self-indulgent. Mm-hmm. But you have been, your entire career, focused on other people, even if they have identity traits in common with you. Your work has been, one might say, other regarding, you know, focusing on other individuals, communities, even though you're a member of the many communities mm-hmm. that you've rendered visible in your work. For a visual activist, how powerful is a self-portrait as a way to reflect not just on who you are and to present yourself to the world, but still to be commenting on the world itself and to avoid slipping into narcissism with a collection of self-portraits?
I know that
I hope people, that came out right.
No, the portraiture series came out from a frustration or a corner of frustration. It didn't, you know, come easily. And I had to think about, like, all the spaces where I've been to and my experience within those spaces. And I had to respond to those issues. And also not seeing many images that spoke that speaks about artists in different spaces in response to racism, as I keep on saying. So maybe other people say, or they might say it's narcissistic, but I think that the power of portraiture has a lot to do with existence, to say, what do you see when you look at yourself? Mm-hmm. What do you think when you look at yourself? What are you saying with those portraits? Because it's not about, like, okay, these images are beautiful. Some people might look at them as ugly and they wonder, why do we have to look at these images? So the whole point is, look, these images are meant to respond to a number of historical events that are taking place, mm-hmm. and also are aimed at, like, giving other people an opportunity to love themselves,
yes,
including myself, without any fears, because we live as people who are ever judged. Your existence mm-hmm. becomes a threat to other people. So for once, you say to yourself, let me own me, let me love me, let me self-represent, than to always wait for other people to represent you.
I don't think they're ugly at all. I think they are probably part of the highlights of your career as a visual activist.
Yeah.
They're incredibly powerful and arresting and even uncomfortable.
Indeed.
Particularly just how dark the black is. I mean, it really is incredible. What were you trying to capture? You don't have control over how the viewer interacts with your work. It's part of the beauty of walking into a gallery, an exhibition, picking up a monograph, is that you've got your own intentions, then you have the product. But us as the consumers of your work, we also bring our own subjectivities to how we look at your work. You're not responsible for what goes on in my ngondo. But when I see your work, even as someone who is, I hope, reasonably literate on the question of race in our society, mm-hmm. I still find the portraits to be incredibly uncomfortable in a politically interesting way. Yeah. Did you have an intention for what you wanted to evoke?
Indeed. I wanted to make sure, first of all, that we have a book like this that exists, that speaks on blackness and a black pride, not in a light manner, not when you say, oh, melanin, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's just beyond that. We hardly see images of black people done by themselves in South Africa, in as much as we live in a democratic country, we call it so. And also to say that it's about time that we create books that lives on, that lives beyond us, because I might be here now, but tomorrow no more. And we want to make sure that our great-great-grandchildren have access to materials of the people that existed before them and also people that they related to them. But what I wanted to ensure that we have a piece of document that is historical, that is queer, that is black, that is done by own. This then encourages many other people who want to pursue a career in photography to say that, in as much as you'd be looking at other people, start with yourself and question, because other people are maybe might be uncomfortable to be captured.
Yes.
So what about you? What do you see as you look at yourself? And there's this like a misconception or misunderstanding around this book. People always think that I painted myself. So I'll say to them, no, I'm black already. I don't need to paint myself. And the rest is done post-production. Hence you see the images like darker than.
Somnyama, ngonyama. So describe to people, radio is a weird, it's not a visual medium. I'm going to have to tweet some examples, but I really like people to buy this work, to engage with it. It's not just a archiving, although it is in the first instance that. It is profoundly political and much more than that. What did you set out to do? How does one select portraits? What doesn't make the final cut? I'm very fascinated by the process before this final product exists.
These are taken at different places as I hop along. Different hotel rooms, there's no extra lights or fancy anything that exists. So it's just me in different spaces. Sometimes I travel with my colleagues, my crew members, and we happen to find a spot and somebody stand for me in whatever corner and they captured within 10 seconds. Sometimes I take more than like 10, 15 dirty frames on tripod, jumping from one spot to the next. So what has happened in this particular book is during those journeys, as we capture them or as I capture them, because these are self-portraits, these are not selfies. These are just to be specific, when people sing like a lot of images, they, oh, those selfies are so nice. I'm like, no, there's a difference between selfies and self-portraits captured in various spaces. So it's been quite a journey, an unnerving journey, and they were meant to be captured for 365 days.
Okay.
Out of many other images, selection is trimmed down by a number of people who become co-editors. So we have 90 plus images in this book with 24 contributors, and some of them like Napo Mashiane, Cindy Wemakona, and then it becomes our book, not my book, because those are, you know, public figures who have touched on gender, who have touched on womanhood, who have touched on race in their work. Absolutely. As well. So it's been a process and a half, and selection is never nice, because there were times where there's a powerful images, or that I thought that it was powerful, but that it wasn't powerful, you know, to editors that I work with in the book, which hurt me so much. But we were looking at, like, how do you work on a number of people who say, okay, if it's 90 images, it speaks on a transition period in South Africa. And if it's 24 contributors, it speaks on the now, as we commemorate and celebrate 24 years of South African democracy.
Right. Yeah.
And then the contribution, and also people contributing their text and their voices in this book, it speaks on the importance of collaborations as we produce the work. Yeah.
20 minutes after 10, you're listening to the voice of Zanele Moholi, who is a well-known South African visual activist. Do you love her work? Have you engaged with it? Any questions you want to ask her about her journey? It has been an incredible career. We're also going to delve into where it all started in her own politicization. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg. If you want to pick up the phone and give us a call and be part of this profile interview with her. If you are in Cape Town, you can do so on 021-446-0567.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
24 minutes after 10 o'clock, we're getting to know Zanele Moholi, both her current work that is just art, a collaborative effort, but also where it all began. And of course, it all began in Durban, in Umlazi, in the 1970s. You were born in 1972. You're still a children. Paint a picture for us of what it was like growing up there, because our early lives haunt us into adulthood. And you can come and look for your fortune in Cape Town or in Joburg, but even when you sometimes are not aware of it politically and psychologically, the relationship with mom, a dad that passes on at the age of two, mom that works, those early life is critically important, and sometimes it's painful to go back there, and it manifests itself in ways that you may not always know. What was it like, Umlazi? What comes up for you?
Church. I went to a Catholic church, And then every Sunday you were forced to wake up, dress up and go to church. And most of the time you had to put on a dress and put on those ugly shoes, if they were shoes at all, or walk to church. So my mother's house is not far from the church. So it was like 7 minutes walk to church. Yeah, and then but you stole it and it, you make it like longer because you just refuse to go to church. Anyways, Catholic church, and then I was baptized, confirmed, and da da da. At some stage, I thought that I'd become a nun. Yeah,
that's so funny. I was raised Catholic too. We all have a past. My grandfather wanted me to be a priest. Like, no chance.
Yeah.
So I know all about that. How do you? What's your relationship with religion now?
I go to VMCI, Victories International Ministries, which is a queer-friendly church, and it's headed by a trans man.
Oh, okay.
I go to church at Easter's, and also now it's December time, I go to church because it's fun to be in a space where a lot of like queer bodies are in one space and nobody judges anybody. Yeah, so it's easier.
So it's a different space to the Catholic space.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's much different. Good music. I try not to be like consumed much about by the church. It's easy to be there or not to be there. Yeah. So I have a choice to be at that space. But what I like most is to be in a space with people like us.
Zanella, you're not just concerned with the black body. You're also concerned with gender struggle as well as class struggle. And it's interesting because all three of those themes intersect in the life of your mom. Like many black moms, your mom was a domestic worker.
Yeah.
And womanhood is something that's critically important to you. If you reflect now with the language that you now have, the excellence that you have developed, the conceptual framework, paint us a picture of your mom's life and your relationship as a child with your mom.
My mom's name is Bester Mohole, and I believe that she's with us even though she's late. And the early memories that I have as a child is of my mother waking up every morning. Sometimes we could barely spend time with her because she had to go to work. So she spent many hours at work as a domestic worker. And some of my early work was looking at Masa and Mina.
Mm-hmm.
That was mid-2000 or so.
Yes.
And I shelved the project. Now in this book, it's a dedication to my mom and many domestic workers that existed. Hence, some of these, or most of the images, are highly feminized, which is not my 24/7, you know, position. And mother worked for 42 years as a domestic worker, and she received like nothing pension. Few years after she left work, she got sick and she succumbed to cancer of the liver, and she dies. Which meant that she had nothing left. So it's one of those painful moments.
And it's very painful, images, isn't it? Because the other thing about our moms who are domestic workers is that the irony is that often they sacrifice a lot of the energy that they couldn't reserve to be full-time moms for us.
Of course.
And they become surrogate moms for Abo 1652s, who end up being the very ones whose racism you end up depicting. So you don't even get to benefit from mom playing surrogate mom, because it's amazing how some of the nincompoops that our moms raised have short memories once they become adults with power.
Yeah, no, that's a pity, it's a pity. But that's when language plays a big role, because these are the mothers who then teaches the language to other children.
That's
and those people's children tend to forget about where they come from. Sometimes
and who raised them, quite literally.
You know, sometimes even forget that they were breastfed by the very same black woman who faces, you know, a lot of pain or experience pain at the hands of the very same children who then becomes bosses.
Mm. Let's take a break there. Then we live in. And one of the more horrible elements of injustice is that if you're part of communities that are oppressed, whether it be as a lesbian, whether it be as a woman, as a ethnic minority in a country where your ethnicity is a minority, you're sometimes robbed of things that other people can do every single day because they don't have to worry about hegemony. Laughing, having sex, having weird relationships, dancing on the tables. What do you do to make sure that there's self-care, self-love, and you can be silly and normal and everyday? Because sometimes we are robbed of the right to do the everyday things that people who benefit from hegemony get to do, because they don't have to worry about their identities being under threat.
I try by all means to surround myself with people with good energies.
Okay.
I won't lie to you. A very few individuals, less than five.
So your squad that has good energy.
Less than five. I spend a lot of time with young people who are brilliant and open-minded, and they keep me up to date with a lot of things that are happening around. So I get to learn from them. And I try by all means to eat well as well, and try to switch off from toxic energies that exist around us. So I try by all means. Otherwise, self-care, self-love, that's on its own is a mission or an experience. Because early this year, I was down. Mm. Like, I was like really out of it. I was completely meshed out. So I had
one of the things you do when you are down is to tap into the work of other artists who can help you to rise again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Ungizontola. I was born to fight, to make choices wrong or right.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I may have made mistakes, but I believe in life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was born to is wrong or right.
Hey.
I may mistake, but I believe in life. I will rise again. I'll rise again. I'll rise again. I will rise again.
But of course, it's Rise Again by Zahara, one of the artists that Zanella enjoys listening to. And I think the analog in her work is quite obvious why it might resonate with her. We'll take a bit of a break, and then Farouk, we're coming to your call. And then some more, hanging out with visual activist Zanella Moholi. We've got 10 more minutes with her. If you want to say, how's it? Or ask a question, do give us a call.
Eusebius MacIsaac.
Eusebius MacIsaac.
On 702 at Cape Talk.
24 minutes before 11 o'clock, and we're hanging out with Zanella Moholi, just getting to know her and her work. Put on your headphones for me, at the risk of interfering with your gorgeous hairdo.
Oh, no. Come on now.
And we'll take a couple of calls. Connie, good morning.
Hi, Eusebius. Hi, Zanella.
Hello.
Hey, Moholi.
Yes.
You know, girl, I love your work, right? We've seen you grow from strength to strength. And it's really been so amazing to see how far you've come and how far you've been and you're going. So basically what I wanted to find out from you, do you find that there is a bit of a change within the system to allow people like you to really go out and educate each generation, that up and coming generation, about the LGBTIQ, you know, about just, you know, the African history, African women's history in general, because, you know, when we saw you, how you struggled to send the message out there, I think by now we thought things would have been different, where you would be able to go out and access people and be able to speak to people. So do you find that it's easy, or you're still finding difficulty in going out there?
Okay, lovely question. Thank you, Connie. Timothy, good morning. Hi, Timothy.
Hey, good day. Good day, Sibius and Zanelle. How are you doing, Zanelle?
I'm fine, Miss Divine.
I I thought you wouldn't even recognize me.
You'll always be my heart, darling.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, wow. You actually make me actually speechless now. But, you know, I want to say something. I actually want to say something. I mean, remember I was actually on your show and I told you about some of the pictures that, you know, she took and they blew up into something bigger, you know, overseas. And it was because of, you know, Zanella's work. And, you know, by now I thought you would have actually changed, you know, the direction in terms of, you know, taking pictures and being a powerful voice to the LGBTI, you know, community. Because, you know, she wasn't taking pictures of what end up on, you know, everyday newspapers. She was taking pictures that, you know, she will archive and 2 or 3 years down the line, you get, a message on social media. Somebody says, we've seen you somewhere, you know, at some art gallery, and you start asking yourself, how did it happen, you know? And Zanele, my question to you is, what inspires or what motivates you to still continue doing what you're doing? Because okay. It's not like an everyday job.
Yeah, thank you, Timothy. We'll take a last call for now. My fave of faves?
Of course. All the time.
Bongi.
Hello, darling.
Kunjoni. Thanks for calling in.
You are so lucky. Please give her 10 hugs from just 10.
I've already throttled her.
Like, please, and lots and lots of pics, and lots and lots of pics, and post them for us. Quickly, though, how did your mom's life, I mean, to think that she actually gave all her life away to raise others, to live for others. How did that influence the type of approach that you have to art and photography, considering that you do self-portraits, which to me is an exemplification of self-love and preservation? How did that influence you? Number two, where do you find your book? I'm going there now.
Thank you for the love, Bonga. We much appreciate it. Let's honor firstly Connie's question. It can be a question that is draining, but it's a very important question. You and I have the burden of needing to mind the gap between progressive jurisprudence and the reality of homophobia and injustice, and constantly minding that gap. Sometimes we feel like it gets closer. Sometimes it seems to widen. Sometimes it stays the same. Do you feel a burden to do educational work? Is activism a burden? And if you take a long view, because you've been in the game long enough now, have we made any significant progress, let's say, over the last 20 years?
First of all, I have to say that there are different forms of activisms. One, like the one that you are doing. Second, maybe holding a placard and take on the streets and march and scream because you're frustrated, you want to see the change in place. And thirdly, there's this one and many others, like my visual activism. My approach to all of this madness, to bring about the change in our spaces and places and families where we come, because then we can't expect to change anything without starting from homes where we are. To say that sometimes you find yourself in a space where your family is super homophobic or queerphobic or transphobic or many other phobias that are in place. And I think that we have a responsibility as a people to start from our families, to speak to our sisters, brothers, and say that you don't say or treat people like that. It's that there at homes. So we can't expect to change the outside world without starting from where we come. And my take in all of this, we talk education sometimes need to be practical. Theory is much respected. You know, sometimes when you're talking to a wall and there are people who just like refuse completely to understand and they want to mix their own, you know, understanding with our lives. With us, education means to educate or to teach women how to use photography or cameras as a weapon for change or for articulation. So every year a lot of women, especially youth, they are being trained to use that camera as a weapon for political reasons.
Absolutely.
For one to say that, in as much as I'm queer, but then I'm able to make sure that I change face, I change the space in which I'm at. You know, especially in spaces where at home they don't regard you as anything. But then the minute you start like capturing images that brings new meanings or messages, they change their way of like looking at you. Instead of that useless tabane, then sure. It becomes someone sure. Who's capable of doing something.
Yeah.
So the change is much bigger than who we are. And the change starts from within. And also change also those fewer individuals around you to say that, okay, I'll take, I know in mainstream say, take a girl child to school. That's taking that person on under your wing and training them and giving them books to read and giving them books to look at other people who look like them. By the time people go to Pride and other spaces, their minds are a little bit, you know, they become open-minded in different ways. Mm. But I say that change, like, start from within.
Let's talk about Timothy's question. It's a question that many public figures and people who excel get. But I want to honor it and I want to add to it. He asked about what inspires you. I said to Zanele off air during the spot break, I've never seen her looking this chilled, this gorgeous, so relaxed. And I really do mean that. I mean, you make me want to drape myself over my studio because you are just so relaxed. And yet, when you are fighting for justice and equality, that's a heavy project. As a photographer, as an activist, as a member of the LGBTI community, just as a citizen who is committed to a different world than the world that we... 10 minutes before 11 o'clock, we're hanging out with Zanele Moholi, well-known South African visual activist, and just getting to know her. How significant, by the way, was that moment when Lulu Klingwana was deeply offended? Because, I mean... Yeah, it was an oh my God moment, wasn't it? But it was also a moment that, not by your choosing, catapulted you as well in a way that you were not inviting.
You know, that was one of the saddest moments in my life or career, you know. And I looked at it as like, here goes the minister of something, something that's supposed to be taking care of women's art and women's livelihoods. And now I'm being bashed once again. Mm. And it wasn't a solo show. It wasn't a Zanele Moholi solo show.
Yes.
It was a group show with women participating in that. And I got to know about that incident. I was in Pennsylvania abroad when I heard that this is what has just happened in South Africa. And I took on the phone and I called home and I said, what's going on here? Other than that, nobody would have known about that scandal that took place at Constitution Hill, Nochal.
Mm.
And I had to take on this madness and say, I will deal with it. If I don't talk back, a lot of other women artists in this country will be undermined and be bashed because of their same gender loving position that they might find in. So I had to challenge that, even though it didn't mean anything to the department as such, you know, but I know that the fact that somebody said something to say you don't talk like that, and remember that whatever that you are opposing, it's about people's children. And if you are a mother who might have a queer child in the closet that you are not dealing with, think again, because you're putting a lot of other people's lives in danger, more especially in a country where a lot of LGBTI people have been murdered and violated and brutalized simply because of their existence
in this
country.
There were other two things in that moment that was important. One cannot take for granted that black women have solidarity with each other's struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And the second important tragedy of that moment was also realizing that you can have women in the state and in politics. It doesn't make them inherently committed to gender equality and feminism.
Exactly, exactly. That you can't assume that every woman that exists is a feminist.
Yeah.
You can't assume that every woman that exists is loving or has that maternal love that supposedly to be possessed by women who have given birth to other
That's
humans.
Right, yeah.
So I was really, really disappointed, especially by the lack of support from other women who were, you know, participants in that show, you know. And I don't know what was the standpoint of the curator of that show, because nobody told me. I got to hear about that when I was in America. So I was really, really sad. Mm-hmm. I was saddened by the fact that maybe it's because you had a person like me in that show. Maybe other women were not ready. And we're talking less than 10 years ago in South Africa.
That's right.
And you're thinking to yourself, what the heck? Why?
Let's squeeze in a couple of last calls. On the line with us is Yaya Mavundla. Hello, Yaya.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for dropping in on this conversation. How amazing is this human being here in the studio?
Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you this. You are so lucky to actually be interviewing such a legendary person. Even myself, I'm so lucky having met the person and having to work with the person, being my friend. I just want to say I love that person there. I love it so, so, so much. And thank you so much for everything that I am feeling for the LGBTI community, especially the transgender people in South Africa.
And one of the many things about her that we love as a country and that is a gift to the world, Yaya, is how she lives her work. She lives her art.
Mm. That's true. Tell you what, had it not been for Professor Moholi to tell us that we need to speak for ourselves and tell our own stories, I don't think a lot of us would have actually known that, because nobody else actually tells us that. And we need such people in our lives.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for that love and appreciation. Really, really appreciate it. Farouk, good morning.
Hello.
Hi there, Farouk. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Hi. Hi, Zanella. Hi. And there's a visual activist actually being the activist getting me to do a come out of the closet on Ezekiel's show the first time.
There's more oxygen outside. That's the good news.
They say so. Zanella, wonderful. Obviously, taking nothing away from you. Fabulous, fabulous. But the one thing we can't forget is David Goldblatt today, no? He's smiling.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
For smiling. That mentor. So, just everything. Great stuff. And you see, it's good to have lost my virginity for your show. So really.
You're going to make me blush, Farouk. It's lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much. I mean, we haven't even had a chance to talk about, and we will do so on another occasion when her busy schedule permits, not just David, but in general. I mean, one should do a whole one-hour appreciation, shouldn't we, Zanella, of where the Market Photo Workshop fits into the lives of photojournalists and visual artists and activists. Mm. Let's take a final call. Napo, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Dan.
Hello. I am fine, my friend. It's good to have you in the country for a change.
Yes. For once, this one is always global. I was saying to my team, Napo, that it would be a horrible tragedy, and us in the media in particular will have to take responsibility if, like the great artists of the 60s and 70s, many of them become more famous in Amsterdam than in Joburg. So I'm glad that we are profiling her today. How would you describe this wonderful human being's place in our lives politically and artistically?
I mean, I have known that amazing, you know, creative, artistic soul for years. I actually even tear up, and I don't know if Zanella knows what kind of impact that, you know, she constantly makes in my life. I've had the pleasure of working with Zanella, I've traveled with Zanella, I've collaborated with Zanella. Umholi is just a force to be reckoned with, and I'm happy that finally, you know, in our own individual way, including yourself, we're celebrating this activist, this amazing visual being. And you are, like Yaya said, you are lucky that Umholi is in the country.
Yes.
And that we can capture, you know, the kind of work that, you know, she does. I've got friends in the States who, you know, bow. And actually, I become famous because of her. But the minute they know that I know her, they're like, oh, you know her. I'm like, oh, please, I've been to Zanella's house. Oh, please. I've had Zanella lecture me and tell me where to get off in the most loving way, but also challenging me.
Absolutely.
You know, Zanella is an inspiration, and I think South Africa is lucky to know
absolutely.
And to have to have her in our lifetime. So
absolutely.
My friend, we are talking of Tanda.
Thank you, Napo. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's Napo Mashana. Of course, he's a poet and an author. Quick questions. Don't think about it. We just have like 30 seconds left. Favorite food?
Amadumbe.
Okay. Favorite South African city?
It has to be Johannesburg.
I can't wait because you're now global. Famous favorite international city?
It's Amsterdam, sadly.
What makes you laugh most quickly? What makes you really angry? What cheesy that then we live in? And one of the more horrible elements of injustice is that if you're part of communities that are oppressed, whether it be as a lesbian, whether it be as a woman, as a ethnic minority in a country where your ethnicity is a minority, you are sometimes robbed of things that other people can do every single day because they don't have to worry about hegemony. Laughing, having sex, having weird relationships, dancing on the tables. What do you do to make sure that there's self-care, self-love, and you can be silly and normal and everyday? Because sometimes we are robbed of the right to do the everyday things that people who benefit from hegemony get to do because they don't have to worry about their identities being under threat.
I try by all means to surround myself with people with good energies.
Okay.
I won't lie to you. Very fewer individuals, less than five.
So your squad that's here has good energy.
Less than five. I spend a lot of time with young people who are brilliant and open-minded, and they keep me up to date with a lot of things that are happening around. So I get to learn from them. And I try by all means to eat well as well and try to switch off from toxic energies that exist around us. So I try by all means. Otherwise, self-care, self-love, that's on its own is a mission or an experience. Because early this year, I was down. Like I was like really out of it. I was completely meshed out. So I
And one of the things you do when you are down is to tap into the work of other artists who can help you to rise again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Wambizu Mthola.
I was born to fight, to make choices wrong or right.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I may have made mistakes, but I believe in life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was born is wrong or right.
Yeah.
I may have made mistakes, but I believe in life. I will rise again, I'll rise again, I'll rise again. I will rise again.
That, of course, is Rise Again by Zahara, one of the artists that Zanella enjoys listening to. And I think the analog in her work is quite obvious why it might resonate with her. We'll take a bit of a break, and then, Farouk, we're coming to your call. And then some more hanging out with visual activist Zanella Moholi. We've got 10 more minutes with her. If you want to say, how's it, or ask a question, do give us a call.
Eusebius Makaiser.
Eusebius Makaiser.
On 702 at Cape Talk.
10 minutes before 11 o'clock, we're hanging out with Zanella Moholi, well-known South African visual activist, and just getting to know her. How significant, by the way, was that moment when Lulu Klingwana was deeply offended? Because, I mean, yeah, it was an oh my God moment, wasn't it? But it was also a moment that, not by your choosing, catapulted you as well in a way that you were not inviting.
You know, that was one of the saddest moments in my life or career, you know. And I looked at it as like, here goes the minister of something, something that's supposed to be taking care of women's art and women's livelihoods. And now I'm being bashed once again. Mm. And it wasn't a solo show. It wasn't a Zanele Moholi solo show.
Yes.
It was a group show with women participating in that. And I got to know about that incident. I was in Pennsylvania abroad when I heard that this is what has just happened in South Africa. And I took on the phone and I called home and I said, what's going on here? Other than that, nobody would have known about that scandal that took place at Constitution Hill, Nochal.
Mm.
And I had to take on this madness and say, I will deal with it. If I don't talk back, a lot of other women artists in this country will be undermined and be bashed because of their same gender loving position that they might find in. So I had to challenge that, even though it didn't mean anything to the department as such, you know. But I know that the fact that somebody said something to say you don't talk like that, and remember that whatever that you are opposing, it's about people's children. And if you are a mother who might have a queer child in the closet that you are not dealing with, think again, because you're putting a lot of other people's lives in danger, more especially in a country where a lot of LGBTI people have been murdered and violated and brutalized simply because of their existence
there
in
this country.
There
were other two things in that moment that was important. One cannot take for granted that black women have solidarity with each other's struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And the second important tragedy of that moment was also realizing that you can have women in the state and in politics. It doesn't make them inherently committed to gender equality and feminism.
Exactly, exactly. That you can't assume that every woman that exists is a feminist.
Yeah.
You can't assume that every woman that exists is loving or is has that maternal love that supposedly to be possessed by women who have given birth to other humans.
Right, yeah.
So I was really, really disappointed, especially by the lack of support from other women who were, you know, participants in that show, you know. And I don't know what was the standpoint of the curator of that show, because nobody told me. I got to hear about that when I was in America.
Sure.
So I was really, really sad. I was saddened by the fact that maybe it's because you had a person like me in that show. Maybe other women were not ready. And we're talking less than 10 years ago in South Africa.
That's right. That's
and
right,
you're thinking to yourself, what the heck? Why?
Let's squeeze in a couple of last calls. On the line with us is Yaya Mavundla. Hello, Yaya.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for dropping in on this conversation. How amazing is this human being here in the studio?
Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you this. You are so lucky to actually be interviewing such a legendary person. Even myself, I'm so lucky having met the person and having to work with the person, being my friend. I just want to say I love that person there. I love it so, so, so much. And thank you so much for everything that I am feeling for the LGBTI community, especially the transgender people in South Africa.
And one of the many things about her that we love as a country and that is a gift to the world, Yaya, is how she lives her work. She lives her art.
Mm. That's true. Tell you what, had it not been for Professor Moholi to tell us that we need to speak for ourselves and tell our own stories, I don't think a lot of us would have actually known that, because nobody else actually tells us that. And we need such people in our lives.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for that love and appreciation. Really, really appreciate it. Farouk, good morning.
Hello.
Hi there, Farouk. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Hi, Zanele. Hi. And there's a visual activist actually being the activist, getting me to do a come out of the closet on Eusebius' show the first time.
There's more oxygen outside. That's the good news.
They say so. Zanele, wonderful. Obviously, taking nothing away from you. Fabulous, fabulous. But the one thing we can't forget is David Goldblatt today, no? He's smiling.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
For smiling. That mentor.
So
Just everything. Great stuff. And you see, it's good to have lost my virginity for your show. So really.
You're going to make me blush, Farouk. It's lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much. I mean, we haven't even had a chance to talk about, and we will do so on another occasion when her busy schedule permits, not just David, but in general. I mean, one should do a whole one-hour appreciation, shouldn't we, Zanella, of where the Market Photo Workshop fits into the lives of photojournalists and visual artists and activists. Mm. Let's take a final call. Napo, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Dan.
Hello. I am fine, my friend. It's good to have you in the country for a change.
Yes. For once, this one is always global. I was saying to my team, Napo, that it would be a horrible tragedy, and us in the media in particular will have to take responsibility if, like the great artists of the 60s and 70s, many of them become more famous in Amsterdam than in Joburg. So I'm glad that we are profiling her today. How would you describe this wonderful human being's place in our lives politically and artistically?
I mean, I have known that amazing, you know, creative, artistic soul for years. I actually even tear up. And I don't know if Zanella knows what kind of impact that, you know, she constantly makes in my life. I've had the pleasure of working with Zanella. I've traveled with Zanella. I've collaborated with Zanella. Umholi is just a force to be reckoned with, and I'm happy that finally, you know, in our own individual way, including yourself, we're celebrating this activist, this amazing visual being. And you are, like Yaya said, you are lucky that Umholi is in the country.
Yes.
And that we can capture, you know, the kind of work that, you know, she does. I've got friends in the States who, you know, bow. And,
yes.
And actually, I become famous because of her. But the minute they know that I know her, they're like, oh, you know her. I'm like, oh, please, I've been to Zanella's house. Oh, please. I've had Zanella lecture me and tell me where to get off in the most loving way, but also challenging me.
Absolutely.
You know, Zanella is an inspiration, and I think South Africa is lucky to know
and to have
her in our lifetime. So,
absolutely.
My friend, we are talking of Tanda.
Thank you, Napo. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's Napo Mashana, of course, he's a poet and an author. Quick questions. Don't think about it. We just have like 30 seconds left. Favorite food?
Amadumbe.
Okay. Favorite South African city?
It has to be Johannesburg.
I can't wait because you're now global. Favorite international city?
It's Amsterdam, sadly.
What makes you laugh most quickly?
Lerato Dumsa.
What makes you really angry? What cheeses you off?
Aggressive people. Backstabbers. Bashful people who don't want to see progress or who don't want to hear positivity. They really, 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 that really annoys me.
Zanella, thank you for you. Thank you for your work. Thank you for always being poised despite the struggles on your body. And all the best with what has already been an amazing gift. Thanks so much for coming in.
Ngiyabonga.
This is your
aggressive people, backstabbers, bashful people who don't want to see progress or who don't want to hear positivity. They really, 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 that really annoys me.
Zanella, thank you for you. Thank you for your work. Thank you for always being poised despite the struggles on your body. And all the best with what has already been an amazing gift. Thanks so much for coming in.
Ngiyabonga.